Hello, everybody. Welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly. This is episode number 88. I'm your host, Dr. Vankman. And with us today, we have, you know, a few of our geek tyrants. They're going to be chatting it up movie style. Right, guys?
Right.
Guys?
Yes.
I like cream
and
style
you guys,
myself.
You guys sound like so enthusiastic about this. Come on. Okay, we got Mazer in the house. Hello, Mazer. Mazer?
Exactly.
Okay.
I want acknowledgement from this board.
Yeah.
What's up, Dr. Frankman? How you doing, man?
Oh, man. You know, it's been a great and interesting week. It ended on a high note. I'm feeling good. And I'm feeling good.
Michael Bublé style, man. You're feeling good. It's good to hear.
Yeah, you told. Well, we know what's going on. Good, yeah. good big stone lifted off your shoulders there, bud.
No joke. Of course, I'm under contract not to say anything publicly about it.
Yeah.
All I can say is he was acquitted, so.
Listeners should just know that your life has just dramatically improved, and that's all they needed.
Yeah.
So. Yes. And I won.
Yes.
Can I just... I won?
Yeah.
Can we agree?
Absolutely.
That I won the game? All right, cool. Okay, so then we have P. Vader.
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, you know, it's good. Thanks. So we're going to move right into the box office numbers for the week. And? The weekend?
Yes.
You know how it goes.
Box office it up.
So, Resident Evil Afterlife came in at number one, $26.6 million. Worldwide, it made over, I think it made over $78 million on its opening weekend.
Wow.
So Resident Evil Afterlife is doing very well for itself.
That movie, the clip they showed at Comic-Con was so bad. And they were all excited about it being in 3D. And it was like, you brought nothing.
Look,
you should have not shot in 3D. You'd probably be better off.
I am going to talk about this movie. I saw this movie. So I'm going to talk about this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Save it for the review section, definitely.
All right, yes, I will, definitely. Number two, Takers, right? In its third week in theaters, $5.6 million. Big dramatic leap. There from 26.6 to 5.6.
Yeah, that's
The American. I know, right? The American with George Clooney, 5.6 million. Machete came in at number four, 4.2 in its second week. Going the Distance, 3.7 million in its second week. The Other Guys came in at number six, 3.3. Number seven, The Last Exorcism, 3.3. Number eight, The Expendables, 3.2. Number nine, Eat, Pray, Love, 2.9, and number 10, hanging in there, and it's ninth week in a row, is Inception, 2.8. So yeah, kind of surprised by the top three. Resident Evil, I guess we should assume that that's what was going to happen. Takers, I don't know who's seeing this movie, but it does not look good at all. The poster itself, that Photoshop poster,
yeah,
just was like, no, I'm not. I can't see this movie if they can't create a decent poster for it. I judge this whole movie based on that poster.
Yeah,
the lack of a poster. It was just like they had taken every photo from someone in this movie off of Google Images and composited it together.
Yeah,
it was really bad.
It was weird.
Really bad.
Then we've got The American, which I don't know. It just looks insanely boring to me. But everyone's saying, like, oh, it's George Clooney's best performance ever. But
they said that about the last one.
Is somebody saying that? Is somebody saying that it's Clooney's best performance ever?
Well, something like that. It's like,
okay.
Yeah, his best performance.
Wow.
You know, Clooney gives his best performance. Let's eat something.
It must be Pete Hammond, the guy who misuses the word literally and just, like, you know, is basically a quote whore for any poster that he can come across. But
I love quote whores.
One thing that I do want to mention before we skip out of the box office numbers is that I think the only reason Resident Evil did so well is because it was the only movie to open this weekend, like the only major release. You know, all the other ones are they're multiple weeks of release by now. So it's like the people.
Well, and then a lot of people liked it too. There are a lot of people that are like, oh yeah, you know, when I tweeted out to people saying, hey, did anyone see Resident Evil? If so, what'd you think? And I'd say 90% of the people came back saying it was awesome. Go see it. You're gonna like it. All this stuff. So
did they say to see it in 3D?
It's only in 3D. You can't not see it in 3D. Yeah, huh. As far as I know, I haven't found it anywhere where it's not playing in 3D. So anyway, we'll get into that after the box office history, which we're moving into now. We're going to travel back in time to the year 1985. This is a great year. One of my favorite years of all time. Probably the best year of my life.
Really?
Oh. You peaked early, I got to say. Because 85.
Dude, I loved 85. Okay. I loved it. You know what? I was, 6 years old in 85? Yes!
I guess we all peak at 85.
No,
I think Vader and
I was 4 months old at this, or like 4 weeks old or something at this point in time. So
I actually was about to be born at the end of the month. So
man, you guys really missed out. I got to tell you, it was seriously an amazing year for movies.
All right, well, let me go ahead and start because I think I know not very many movies from 1985 that could possibly be in this category right now. So I'm going to go ahead and guess Back to the Future was in the top 10.
Ooh. Hell yeah, it was.
There you go.
Come on. All
right.
So where's that?
Back to the Future is at number one in its 10th week in a row.
Wow.
No.
One
for 10
weeks.
It was out for 10 weeks and it's still number one. Holding $5.2 million.
What a solid
film. It's probably me seeing it for the 10th time that week.
Well, Ben kind of took my guess, so just if I get this wrong, just everyone have that in mind. So I'm going to go with Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters. Yes.
Nice.
Number 10.
Wow.
They have it labeled as Ghostbusters in parentheses reissue.
Ah.
So I think they re-released it and it got number 10.
There you go. I'm just
and that re-release, the reissue or whatever was in its third week. And another the Gremlins also came in at number 12, but that was also labeled as a reissue, which I thought was interesting. So they got these two classic 1985 movies being reissued in 1985 shortly after they already came out. So very interesting, but yes.
I'll take it.
So that's two for two.
I'll take it.
Two for two.
Mazer, I apologize if I took your choice.
No, I didn't even think about that. So the thing is, it's got to be for this particular weekend, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I know it's an 85 movie. I don't know if it's going to be in the top 10. Goonies?
No.
Oh.
Goonies was not. I don't know if it had even come out yet. I'm sorry.
Ah.
But you lose. Dang it, we almost had a 3-for-3 for the first time ever.
Way to go, Mazer.
Well, you probably...
Other than Back to the Future, that's like one of the only other 85 film I could think of.
Yeah, no, I'm...
Well, you'll probably kick your ass after I... ass after I tell you what's going on. No, Temple of Doom is not.
Okay.
But let me tell you what is, guys. Number two, all right? Now, Back to the Future is number one in its 10th week. That beat out another Michael J. Fox film that was only out for 3 weeks. So Michael J. Fox was going against himself. Yes, with Teen Wolf. So Teen Wolf came in at number two at $3 million. Number three was a Tim Burton classic, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, at $2.1 million in its fifth week in theaters. Number four, Compromising Positions. Sounds like a softcore porn. $2.1 million. Number five, Volunteers. I never heard of Volunteers, but
sounds
whatever.
Sounds like a softcore porn.
Sounds like a softcore porn. $1.6 million. Number six, one of my personal favorites, American Ninja. $1.5 million. I'm joking. I kid. Okay. Number seven, Year of the Dragon, $1.4 million. Number eight, Steven Spielberg's Cocoon. In its 12th week, 1.3. Silverado came in at number 9 at 1.2. And then Ghostbusters, the reissue, came in at number 10. So that is 1985 in this week in box office history.
Nice.
Nice.
It was nice, wasn't it? See? It wasn't so hard, even though you weren't born yet. All right. So moving on to some reviews. Like I said earlier, I went and saw Resident Evil Afterlife. Why did I see it? Because I didn't have to pay for it. Thank you for the person that paid for me. I appreciate it. Yes, I saw this film. I saw it in 3D. And this is the most ridiculous use of slow motion in a film ever.
Really?
I'm telling you, from start to finish, this movie is slow motion all the way. I mean, it's ridiculous how much slow motion
is it like
used.
A Zack Snyder type of slow-mo where it, like, it's, ramps up, you know, speed ramping and things of that sort?
No, it's
if it's
just,
anything, yeah, if it's anything like no, what we saw at Con, it was just pure slow motion, right?
No, it's like people standing there in slow motion. Hey, I'm getting up in slow motion.
Do they
I'm
deliver dialogue in slow motion?
I mean, they might as well have. They didn't do – I mean, nothing was really done exciting in slow motion. Like, when you look at a Zack Snyder film, he's got the camera zooming in and out. He's got it speeding up, and then with the – then there's the normal speed, and then he does these slow motion shots where, you know, you get to see the cool action that he's trying to portray. This is just – everything is slow motion. Why are you – I mean, the first 10 minutes of the movie is a girl standing in the rain with people walking around her in slow motion. I'm just like, what is going on?
So basically what you're saying is, like, this movie is probably only about 20 minutes in length, but then they just stretched it out into a full-length movie because of the slow-mo.
I am serious, dude. If this movie played out at normal speed, it'd be like a 45-minute flick.
So is it like when they slowed down Justin Bieber by 800%? Does it make it like Enya? Is that what...
Dude, it's... No? I don't know how much they slowed it down, but they slowed it down, like, way too much. I mean... If you saw the footage that they showed at Comic-Con, which I think we posted a film clip of that online, of them in the showers fighting off this the giant hammer guy, that whole scene, literally that whole fight scene is in slow motion. And that fight scene probably lasted a good, 12 minutes maybe? I don't know. It was
crazy. It felt long. It was probably like 4 minutes.
And it, you know, it's like there's a scene where Allie Larder
Larder
has a shotgun, And the shotgun shells are packed with quarters, okay? So they're, like, you know, shooting, killing people with these quarters. So there's quarters flying out at you in 3D, and you're just like, oh my gosh, are you serious? You know, it's this scene where it's like, she slides under the guy and shoots him from the bottom up and, like, you know, blows him away or whatever. He falls down. And all this is in slow motion, by the way.
Right. I think that could, like, be assumed at this point.
Yeah, right. Okay. So, she's getting up, and the music, you know, there's, like, this Resident Evil-type music where it's, like, I don't know how to, you know, Resident Evil type music, kind of like a techno, like,
yeah.
Yeah, like rave music.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So then the music stops, you know, and the guy's laying in the water for, like, I don't know. He's laying in the water in slow motion and not even moving. And then when he starts to move, the music, like, starts to pick up, like, oh, he's still alive. You know, and you're just like, and he gets up in slow motion. And they're standing there in slow motion. And you're just like, when is this thing going to end? It was seriously just awful. And on top of that, you know, now let's move past the slow motion. Let's move on to some of the acting here. This acting was seriously, every male character in this film was like Lucas Lee in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Everybody talked like that. Everybody. Wentworth Miller, you know, and you had the evil villain guy with the glasses, and you see in the trailer when he throws it at the screen. 3D, and but yeah, they all talk like, yes.
Was the 3D in this movie?
I'll do this.
Go ahead, Bangman.
No, I was, just the way they were, just like, yeah. Lucas Lee. Yeah, I was just like, really? Really? Are you serious? This is just terrible.
Which had the worst 3D, this movie or Piranha 3D?
Honestly, both of them sucked.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but a lot of people are like, oh, 3D was awesome, and I'm like, they did not even utilize the 3D to what it should have been.
Equally,
it was
stuck.
Just so it was done incredibly boring, you know?
Yeah.
It was boring 3D. I'm sorry to say.
Okay, I got something for you. What about, like? You know, you were talking about the acting not being great, and, you know, we've talked about other movies like The Expendables, where you go
everything was dry and monotone through the whole thing. There was, like, no one had any inflection, or, like, everything was just, like,
I don't know. I mean, when we were talking about The Expendables, you said I said that the acting was bad, and you were like, hey, no, everybody goes into The Expendables expecting the acting to be bad. Nobody goes in looking for acting. And I assume it's kind of the same thing with the Resident Evil franchise, because personally I've never seen any one of these movies before, which is why I haven't really said much about this. But I don't know what people do go to these movies to see. I assume it's like Mia Jovovich or whatever doing, like, awesome, cool stuff. And in the movie at all? Like, is the movie fun, or does it achieve whatever type of purpose that it set out to do? And it's
That's the problem, is I think the 3D totally ruined this movie, because the other films have been fun and action-packed. I enjoyed the other films, and in this one, everything was – they literally built this movie around the gimmick of shooting it in 3D, and I think that killed the action in it. And the CG was absolutely terrible. Like, the CGI was so, like, bad. It was like, you know, Sci-Fi Channel, like, TV bad.
That's what I was getting ready to say. It feels like this franchise should be relegated, or probably should have been relegated, to the Sci-Fi Channel, like, a couple movies ago.
Yeah, and now they're doing the fifth one that they're saying, you know, because it made so much damn money. So So now they're doing a fifth one, and I'm just like, why? Like, seriously, after this,
yeah.
Why? They left the movie wide open for one, too. But, yeah, there are a ton of holes in the film. I didn't expect it to be good. Like, I wasn't going in expecting it to be, like, a great film. I knew it was going to have its problems, because they all have, but I didn't think it was going to be this bad. But there are people out there that are saying, this is the best one out of the series. And I'm like, I don't see it.
Do you think they're approaching it from a different viewpoint? Do you think they're going in, do you think they're saying, this movie is so bad that it's good, and you're looking at it from, like, a legitimate standpoint?
I have no idea. For example, my dad loved it. My dad loved this movie. He was one of those people that said it was better than any of the other ones.
I've got to say, with your dad, like, it was probably more his pace.
I know, right? So, yeah, he loved this movie. And I'm like, you know, he's like, you got to go see it. You're going to enjoy it. I'm like, all right, you talked me into it. So I went and saw it. No, I didn't enjoy it. Sorry, Dad.
Yeah. If he says it's too fast, then that might be good. Yeah, we got some comments from the chat, and we have Brett Kix, who said, you know, he doesn't like what they're doing and with it, and he hasn't liked it since the first one. And I'm in the same boat. It was okay. Even the first one was okay, right? So.
Yeah, the first one was okay. I've enjoyed it. Most of them, for the most part, because I know
Have you played all the games?
I haven't played all of them. I've played the most of them. My favorite is the original on the PS, the original PS1. You know, where they're like in the mansion. It's like, I hope that's not Chris's blood. the acting carried over from the video game. I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that line, though. I don't know why, but that's stuck in my memory forever.
Well, I think it's because afterwards we quoted it for weeks.
I know. Seriously. So, yeah, I can't not recommend this movie enough. Don't go see it.
I love the double negatives.
So, yeah. I wish I could remember the dialogue so I could, like, quote it to you, but I just, at this point, it's just not even worth it. So you guys, just save your money. That's all I'm saying. Rock on.
Oh, I'll save it.
Go see Scott Pilgrim again. Let's get that back up in the top 10.
Yes. It wasn't there for very long.
Oh, dude.
Doesn't sound like there's going to be a Scott Pilgrim reissue.
No, it doesn't.
Callback. Nicely done, Mazer. Alright, well, I guess I'll talk a little bit about a Never Let Go.
My name is Kathy H. I'm 28 years old. I now spend most of my time not looking forwards, but looking back on what happened to us at Hailsham.
Catch it, Tommy!
Why didn't Tommy get the ball?
There was once a boy who ran off beyond the boundary. They found him in the woods, with his hands and feet cut off.
Who told you these stories?
Everybody knows them.
And how do you know they're true?
You'd make up stories as horrible as that.
This movie has been getting really, really awesome reviews on the festival circuit. I believe it premiered... Oh, man, now I'm going to get this wrong. It was either Telluride or Toronto, one of the two festivals that are going on right now, or just very recently concluded. But this movie stars Keira Knightley, the future Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield, and Carey Mulligan. And it's directed by Mark Romanek, who's actually only directed one feature before, which was the 2002 Robin Williams movie, 1 Hour Photo, which I didn't see. But he did a bunch of...
It was a good movie. I like that movie.
Yeah? Good stuff? Okay.
Disturbing.
Yeah, it was very disturbing, but it was a very well-made film.
Nice. Yeah, he did a bunch of music videos. He did the music video for Scream, the Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson collaboration, Red Hot Chili Peppers Can't Stop, and Jay-Z's 99 Problems. So you guys have probably seen his work, even if you haven't seen his movies. But this movie is like, It's very British. It's very, like, slow. I mean, the movie, okay, the kind of conceit, I'm not going to give too much away if possible. The movie kind of takes place in, like, this kind of dystopian future England where, or, like, an alternate timeline, really, because it actually takes place, like, from the 70s to the 1990s. But it follows these three characters, and they're, like, they kind of grow up in this boarding home or whatever, boarding school, and it follows their kind of relationships there. And, like, it's the two girls that I said and the one guy, and, like, there's this love triangle going on between them, and then it kind of progresses in time forward to when they're 18 years old. The first segment is when they're, like, what, probably 10 or 12 or something, and then it jumps ahead a little bit to when they're 18, and then again later on to their kind of adult lives or whatever. And it just kind of follows their relationships over the years and kind of charts their progress and the kind of different points on that love triangle that they hit and things like that. I don't know. The movie is gorgeous to look at. It's very visually pleasing. Probably one of the best shot movies I've seen in a little while. And the movie kind of reminds me of, I don't know. It's definitely Oscar bait. It's like, this is the type of movie that screams awards consideration and stuff like that. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised if Carey Mulligan and Keira Knightley got nominated. Maybe one for lead actress, one for supporting or something, however they're going to distinguish that. But that's the type of movie this is. And you just have to kind of go into it knowing that it's going to be that type of movie. It's very slow, very deliberate. And like I said, gorgeous to look at, but it's not like that compelling. There's a twist that comes fairly early on that's kind of alluded to in the trailers that I don't know how far – Dr. Venkman, how far into this do you want me to get as far as plot and stuff? Do you think we can talk about it kind of peripherally, or should I actually go into it?
I don't know. If you do, I'm going to cut off because I actually really want to see this
movie. Okay, all right. Well, I won't spoil anything then. Okay. So if you guys have any questions that you want to know about it or anything that you want to know about it that doesn't necessarily spoil like specific details, you can throw them my way and I'll try to talk about it in that context.
What happens at the end?
Is it better than The Island?
See, that's funny because I actually compared the movie to The Island in a review that I wrote, and I think it's the indie version of The Island is what I wrote. And man, this is so hard to talk about without getting into spoilers. Okay. The Island is obviously Michael Bay and super kinetic and just ridiculous and very action-based.
It's a hard comparison, it sounds like.
Well, it is a hard comparison because of the style and the acting and stuff like that. But plot-wise, it's more similar than you would think. Which is a very strange comparison to make, The Island and Never Let Me Go. Yeah. But that, you know, it's definitely a valid comparison, I think. Alex Garland wrote this movie, and he's the screenwriter behind, like, 28 Days Later and Sunshine and some of the Danny Boyle stuff. And we've talked about him a couple times on the podcast before. Mazur, we were talking a little bit before we started recording that this is actually based on a very popular novel, right? You know probably a little bit more about this than I do.
I don't. No. Oh. I don't, but I know it's based on a popular novel.
Okay, well, yeah, that's...
But I'm told by a reader of the book that Carey Mulligan is perfect casting.
Okay. Yeah, she was great. Like, the performances, that's something I can talk about. The performances were really, really pretty outstanding. I think Andrew Garfield does well. There's one particular spot where he kind of goes a bit over the top, and that's shown in the trailer, and it seems to scream, look at me, give me an award, Oscars, that kind of thing. But I think he, like, overall kind of rises above that particular scene, you know, because that's something where I was watching and I was just, like, rolling my eyes. Like, you can see straight through stuff like that, because it didn't necessarily... It went a little bit too far than the character would have gone, I felt. Like, I just felt like it was done very specifically for that purpose. I don't know, maybe that's just me being cynical. But I felt like he did a good job and kind of overcame that that kind of eye rolling whatever. Carey Mulligan was really good, and I haven't seen her in much, but she was very good. I'm looking forward to checking her out in Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps. And Keira Knightley, who I normally don't like, I thought did a pretty good job. She was kind of she was very effective, very kind of menacing, and when she needed to be, and kind of cold and calculating when she needed to be. The one thing that I did want to mention is that the three leads play themselves in like the two final timelines, the one where they're 18 and then again when they're 28. But the one in Hailsham, which is the English boarding school, younger actors portray those same characters. And the girl who plays Carey Mulligan's character, her name is, hang on one second, I'm blanking on it right now. It's something kind of hard to pronounce. Okay, Isabel Meekley-Small. She looks exactly like what I picture a young Carey Mulligan to look like. And she was fantastic. So I think if nothing else in this movie, then at least this is kind of a starting point for her career. And I think she could do some good things if this movie is any indication.
Cool.
As far as recommending it, yeah, like I said, you really got to know what you're getting into. If you're a fan of these types of kind of slow burn indie movies, then yeah, you'll probably enjoy it. I was reading a bunch of reviews and stuff after I saw it where people were like talking about how people were crying and all this, and it's like super emotional, and like I just didn't have that effect on me. So I don't know. That I'm just throwing that out there for your consideration.
All right. Well, let's talk about this big Dark Tower thing that's going on, shall we?
Sure.
Stephen King's The Dark Tower. You guys know about this? I'm sure you do. It's
I know about it, but I haven't read the book.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, guys. What am I going to do with you? Like, seriously. How can I talk to you about, like, the excitement of everything and... You guys haven't even read the book. Not one of them.
Sorry.
I don't read very much.
Not one of the eight that are out there. One of the eight in the series.
It sounds cool, but I've never read it.
Well, it is cool, man. Come on, people.
Give us a brief synopsis. Right.
Well, I'm not going to give you that.
Okay.
No. Screw you.
I will outright deny what you ask for, sir.
Yeah, this is probably one of the most anticipated film projects ever. I mean, this could be as big or bigger than Lord of the Rings, Star Wars.
Whoa.
Harry Potter, I mean, this has, like, the potential to be huge, like, just a huge franchise, a huge moneymaker. There are tons of fans of the books out there that have been waiting to see a movie happen. The only problem is it's always been one of those things where it's like there's no way you would be able to make a movie properly and be able to tell this whole story of what Stephen King has given us. He's, you know, there's so much there that I, you know, just don't see how they would be able to tell the story in a movie. So when Ron Howard came on board with producer Brian Grazer and Universal Pictures, they're the guys that are all putting this together. They announced their plans recently on how they are actually going to tackle this amazing property. They're going to do a three-film trilogy, okay? So we're going to get three feature-length movies.
Okay.
And in between each movie, they're going to do a full season of a TV series that will connect the first movie to the second movie and the second movie to the third movie to be able to tell the full story. So I think we're probably looking at maybe – I'd say 10 to 12 episodes between each movie.
Wow.
And they will the actors that they bring in with on the films will also be the actors that will portray the characters on the TV shows as well. So this is like such a huge project.
Yeah.
For wouldn't it be sweet to be an actor and land this role?
Yeah.
And know that you're going to be working for the next 10 years easy. You know what I mean?
Is that how long you think it'll take?
No, probably not, but just throwing a number out there.
Yeah, I mean, definitely five. Easily five years. Yeah, but that's...
Yeah.
I've never heard of anything like this before. Like, no. something like this scale?
This is the first time anything like this has ever been done. I mean, you had, like, something like the X-Files, where you had a movie in between the season, but it was kind of a standalone thing and really didn't, you know, connect to... I mean, they had elements that connected to the characters and stuff, but as like a full story being told,
right?
It wasn't really like that. So this, I definitely think this is like the first of its kind. It's a step in the right direction of a way to take a story like this and tell it properly, you know, and give it everything that it needs to. You know, make it work and give us a full-fledged story of everything that we want to see. So yeah. I couldn't be more excited that they had come up with this idea. I mean, this could either be one of the greatest things ever, but if not done right, I mean, it could easily just fall flat on its face.
Yeah.
Easily.
I would say I have, you know... I have my concerns, or I would if I knew anything about the Dark Tower.
Yeah.
What happens with like huge ambitious projects like this is actors start demanding more money, and then it becomes like an issue of re-signing them. So
I think at this point, like, would they already have their plan in place? Whoever they sign, yeah, that contract will just, for anyone involved, the contract will just cover it all.
Yeah, it has to.
Once this once you've got the trilogy and TV show finished, unless it comes to the point where they're going to be like, hey, let's split the last book into two movies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like which is the new thing to do now.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they should have been splitting these books into two movies all along. They would have like quadrupled their money.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think I don't think there'll be any renegotiations. I think whatever they come up with on the contract and everything, I think that'll be cool. But
see, listen, here's my one issue, and it's kind of a big one. I like Ron Howard, and I think he's kind of he's a good, like, kind of classical filmmaker, I think.
And he is directing the film.
Yeah, he can pull off a bunch of different genres, I think. And again, I know almost nothing about The Dark Tower, but something that I have huge amounts of trepidation over is the fact that Akiva Goldsman is writing it. And if you don't know who Akiva Goldsman is, he's the screenwriter behind Batman and Robin. And he's essentially, you know, he worked with Ron Howard on Angels and Demons and Da Vinci Code, and is, you know, not really very well respected among the kind of internet community.
I agree. He's not.
So I don't know. But I don't know. Like, this is such an ambitious project, and I don't want to.
It is. And I've got to hold out. But I've got to hold out hope. I got to have that hope that this is going to work. Because I'm going to be so pissed off if it doesn't.
Yeah. Hopefully he's coming out of his slump or whatever, and he can put something decent into this.
Because I mean, he's going to be taking everything. I mean, he's going to be writing it all. So
hopefully
it
goes more Lord of the Rings than Chronicles of Narnia, right?
Right.
Yes. Yes.
I just had to suppress the urge to do that Chronicles of Narnia rap from SNL a few years ago.
Yeah, so it should be interesting to see how this all plays out, but I'm really excited about it. So I think it's okay to be excited about this. I think If Ron Howard fails at this, he will be blackballed. No matter what he's done.
Yeah.
If he screws this up, a lot of people are going to be pissed.
No pressure or anything, Mr. Howard.
No joke, though. I mean, this is like the equivalent where if he makes a crappy movie, people will easily put him as like, you know, they will
label him the new Brett Ratner.
Yes, exactly. Like he will be in the Brett Ratner Steven Summers Club.
There's the obligatory Brett Ratner reference
M. Night.
That we have in the podcast.
Let's group M. Night in there.
M. Night as
Ooh,
well.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he may be Ron Howard, but if he screws up a fan favorite, you know how the fans react when you know when their favorite stories are screwed up by filmmakers. So
yeah
no pressure, Mr.
Well,
Howard.
That's actually a decent transition into the next topic, which is just we wanted to talk a little bit about the movie Let Me In, which is Matt Reeves' kind of American remake of Let the Right One In. And, you know, you're talking about fans being kind of pissed off when people screw up their properties. What did you want to really talk about as far as this movie goes?
Well, reviews have started coming out from people that have seen it, and it's actually getting a lot of positive buzz. I think one of the horror sites, Bloody Disgusting, who loved the original film, came out and gave this Let Me In like one of their highest movie ratings of the year. So, I've seen a few other reviews come in saying, you know, that this is kind of like a near perfect movie, that it just looks amazing, you know, that it's, you know, the look and the feel and the story, that everything is like perfect. I love the original. I don't know if you guys have seen it or not. I'm a big fan of the original. I thought it was done very well. I didn't like the fact that they were going to remake it, especially like right after the original came out is when it was announced that they were remaking the movie. I think that just rubbed people the wrong way, including myself, so I wasn't excited about it.
They were thinking about doing it before it was even released in the United States.
I don't know.
Right?
I have no idea. But after I saw the footage and I've seen some clips and stuff that have been released online, I can't help be like, you know, this movie actually really does look like it's going to be a decent film. It doesn't look like it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
It looks like it was shot beautifully.
Especially with Reeves at the helm, he wanted them not to make it. And they said they were going to go ahead and do it without him. And it's like, well, I'll do it.
That's like the Zack Snyder Watchmen scenario. That's the exact same thing.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and this is based off of a book. And
yes.
Apparently there's things left out of Let the Right One In, the book, that I believe that they touch on in Let Me In a bit more.
Yeah. So it should be interesting. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, I think the one issue that – because I've been seeing a couple of the things you've been talking about, a couple of the positive reviews and stuff. And if there's a fault – you know, I don't like to read much about movies before I actually see them, just enough to kind of get an idea of what the – you know, what – where it stands in pop culture before I get a chance to check it out. But one of the things that I noticed was people were saying if the movie has a fault, it's that it's almost too similar to Let the Right One In. It's almost like a direct remake where it's just an English language translation of the same type of movie. And, you know, there is something to be said for that because a lot of audiences are lazy and they won't watch Let the Right One In just because it has subtitles and it's in a foreign language. That's a shame because I think the movie deserves to be seen. It's good. I enjoyed the first
one. Or there's just no indie theater in their area. I mean,
well, yeah, but now that it's out and readily
available. Yeah, it's on DVD and stuff. You easily rent, grab a copy of it. They have no excuses now.
Well, yeah, but you know, we say that as film fans, but I think the general population would definitely consider subtitles as a quote unquote excuse. They would look at that as a huge
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, hurdle.
I know tons of people that that won't watch movies because they have subtitles.
I know tons of people that won't. I prefer watching English language movies with subtitles on sometimes. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
I just do it, like, just so, if especially if it's a really well-written movie, like a Tarantino film or something, I almost always throw on subtitles for that, just so I can, especially with, like, you know, snappy dialogue and very kind of rapid-fire stuff, like, I just don't want to miss anything. I can absorb it a lot better that way. I don't know, maybe that's just me, but...
No, I agree. I think there's a lot of... a lot of dialogue that you might not catch by just watching the movie, but if you know by watching it with subtitles, you catch everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I watched Ghostbusters with subtitles for the first time, I was blown away by all the stuff that I missed.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much stuff that you can catch on these on the subtitles. It's definitely worth doing that from time to time.
Yeah, so I'm there with you. I think I'm looking forward to Let Me In. I want to see it. Vader, what do you think?
Well, when I first saw the Let the Right One In, I was kind of like, okay, whatever. But I was surprisingly pleased with it. Like, I enjoyed it, not expecting to, kind of contrary to what you guys have been saying. Like, oh, it's a Swedish movie, blah, blah, blah. That being said, you know, this is an American remake, and I'm going to go into this one as skeptical as I went into the original version, just because for opposite reasons more this time, more because, you know, a remake is – I'm always skeptical of a remake just because it's hardly ever as good as the first. So, but if all the reviews are as true as what they seem, then – yeah, I'm hoping for it to be good. That's all I can say, really.
And maybe even if it's just good enough to drive more people to see the original, then maybe that's like a small victory in and of itself.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I don't know how you guys all feel about it, the audience out there, but it definitely looks like it's worth giving a try. So I wouldn't write it off just yet.
Yeah.
But one other thing I wanted to talk about before we kind of start wrapping things up is James Cameron is producing a True Lies TV series, which I think is pretty freaking awesome.
Boo!
Dude, what? I love True Lies.
I love True Lies as well.
It's a great freaking film, and if they can bring it to the TV with that same kind of humor and action...
Boom.
Why not?
Because the movie came out.
But they can't.
Like, the movie came out in 1994. That genre is so played out. The husband and wife spy thing has been done on film since then in Mr. and Mrs. Smith and, like, super crappy movies. I'm guessing, like, Killers and things like that I haven't even seen. So, like, that genre has just been so played out. And even now on TV, J.J. Abrams has that new show, Undercovers, which is essentially the same type of thing. That's going to be airing on NBC like next week. So it's like, who wants to see another husband and wife spy thing? I love the source material. I love True Lies, but this genre is so played out by now.
But it's going to be done right.
I think.
Come on. Come on.
Here's what I'm going to say, Banks.
Come on, guys.
I think that if
guys.
Can come out with if McGee can come out with, you know, he's got what, Chuck, he's got Nikita now, he's got Human Target, if he can come out with spy shows just like at the drop of a hat, I'm willing to give James Cameron, who doesn't do as many television development projects, I'm willing to give his spy project a chance. An equal, if not greater, chance than those last three.
Hell yeah!
Yeah. You know?
What's up, guys? Yeah, P. Vader's on my side.
Mazer, what do you think?
No.
I don't see how this stays interesting for more than a season. I really don't. It could be really good.
They haven't started making it yet.
Okay.
What?
So,
wait till you see a couple episodes, you know. You never know. What if this thing turns out being, like, absolutely incredible? Like, why couldn't it be incredible? I'm just saying, why couldn't this be a great show?
Because we've already seen the
movie. There's no reason why it can't.
Because it's just going to devolve into stereotypical sitcom elements of ridiculous scenarios that they have to get in.
And maybe it won't.
By season six, they're going to be playing Yakety Sax in the background while they run around and throw pies in each other's faces. Like, it's just going to be like everything that we've ever seen. And, you know, I'll give credit to Cameron for kind of popularizing or maybe not popularizing, that's probably the wrong term, launching, whatever, you know, placing the spy couple genre into the public eye with True Lies and inspiring shows like Alias and a lot of these things that have come after it, you know, some that I already mentioned as well. But I don't know, that's like the concept of making an Uncharted movie, a movie based on Uncharted, the game. The guys on the Slash Film podcast were talking about this a long time ago, and I really kind of agree a lot with what they were saying. They were saying basically that Uncharted, and this is a complete tirade, you know, whatever that term is, where I like
aside,
thank you. An Uncharted movie is just, it's going to be based on the Uncharted game, which itself is based on these, a lot of adventure stories and movies, and culls a lot from this other pop culture stuff, and it's a game, and then they're going to spit that out and turn it around into a movie. It's like so many levels of derivative that I can't imagine that it's going to be great. Barring, of course, if they cast Fillion as the lead, and in which case I'll watch it. I feel the same type of thing here where there's so many, the source material is Cameron's own movies and things that he is inspired, creations that he's inspired and influenced along the way. So a show about that is just going to feel derivative again. I don't know how they're going to be able to bring any originality to it.
But do you think Cameron would do it if he didn't think it was going to be completely awesome? Because he just seems like a guy that doesn't do these slack off projects, that he doesn't waste his time on something that he doesn't think is going to be good. And most everything Cameron does and is involved with ends up being a really good project.
Well, if he was, go ahead, Mazur.
Well, his last TV project,
Sarah Connor Chronicles.
I don't think he really had.
No, he wasn't involved in that.
Oh, no. Okay.
It was with what's her name?
Dark Angel with Jessica Alba.
Dark Angel. Yeah.
I enjoyed Dark Angel.
I saw it here and there.
I know. Okay. Well, I enjoyed it.
I can't say I didn't enjoy it because I didn't really watch it.
Maybe it was just because of Jessica Alba. I don't know. Maybe it was at that time, you know, I was still, like, becoming a man.
Wow, that's for another podcast. One other thing that I wanted to mention is, like, if Venkman, I see what you're saying, that, like, Cameron wouldn't be involved with this unless he had some faith behind it. I think he's just exec producing this. He's not the writer or the showrunner or, you know.
Oh, no, I understand that. But I still think, you know, just getting involved with it is something.
See, I would have said the same thing about Steven Spielberg, but a couple years ago he did this reality show called On the Lot where he was the executive producer, and it was a terrible show. So, and that's Spielberg, awful. For God's sakes. He's like the greatest, you know, he is like the populist director of all time, you know, like he is like blockbuster, you know. And we've come to expect a certain level of quality from him, but he attached his name to that series, and that was terrible. So I feel like Cameron has the, you know, whatever. On the Lot was not based on an original Steven Spielberg concept like this True Lies show will be based on an original James Cameron concept. But I feel like there's some similarities there that can't really be overlooked.
All right. Yeah. Sounds good.
I want to see him do a Titanic show.
I want to see that as well.
Although, okay, one more thing real quick before we end this part. Cameron is like, as big of a director as he is, he somehow always turns into the underdog. Everybody always badmouths his projects before they come out, and then they just completely dominate the universe. So
I know,
maybe
that's what
maybe I'm on the early wave of those people, and then when this show comes out, I'm going to be like, yep, I was one of the people saying the show was going to be terrible. So I'm just throwing that out there as a possibility, but I will stand by my ideals for the time being.
All right.
Yeah, I'm there too. I don't think it's going to be good.
Well, you guys will eat your words when this TV show is released.
I look forward to that day.
I look forward to that day as well. Yes. All right. So let's move on to what is coming out this week, shall we? We've got Ben Affleck's The Town. This is a movie that he directed. I really want to see this movie. Ben was supposed to see it today. Don't know what happened.
Yeah, some sort of studio mishap.
Whatever. I don't know. Sucks, but I'm looking forward to seeing this. I think Ben Affleck is actually a really solid director. I prefer him behind the camera than in front of the camera. I think he's got a talent for directing. Gone Baby Gone was just such an incredible movie. And The Town looks equally as good, so I'm looking forward to that.
You do realize he's, like, starring in The Town,
yes,
right?
I know. And I'm still going to see it, though. It looks good.
He might be this generation's Eastwood.
Maybe. Maybe he's getting there. I don't know. Find out. Then we've got M. Night Shyamalan's Devil. This is a film where whenever I go to the movie theater and M. Night Shyamalan's name pops up on the trailer, everyone in the theater groans. Like, oh, I'm not going to see this movie.
But he's not directing this, though, right?
No.
Yeah. No, he's not. He didn't write it. He didn't direct it. He's producing it, but he had nothing. And he came up with a story, but he didn't have anything to do with writing the script.
On one of our older podcasts, I said that he co-wrote it, and that is not correct. He just came up with the story, and that's it.
Exactly.
I think I'm
looking forward to seeing it. I am.
You
I think
are?
It looks like it'll be a. I am. Yeah, I think it could be. A fun movie. I'm not saying it's going to be amazing, but it could be a fun film.
As soon as I saw M. Night Shyamalan's name on this, and now that I know that he didn't direct it, I was like, "Why'd you do that?" Because people aren't going to see it now. You know, like that was a negative. Reason to go see this movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they should have taken M. Night's name off everything on this thing.
Yeah,
because it would have helped the marketing. But since his name is on it, it's not helping it.
I kind of want to see it too, Dr. Brinkman. Just throw that out there.
Okay, cool. Well, that's good. Yeah, awesome, sweet. Then there's the high school comedy coming out with starring Emma Stone called Easy A. If you're into high school comedies where the main subject matter is sex, then this should be a good movie for you to go see.
I think you just oversimplified the plot of this movie, but
I'm looking forward to it.
I would rather see this than Devil, to be honest with you.
Okay, see? There you go.
Actually, Easy A has been getting really, really phenomenal reviews over the past week or so. Just people who normally don't like these types of movies are saying that it's awesome. It's very kind of sharply written and just very well executed. So I'm a bit more intrigued than I would be at a movie like this.
All right. Sounds good. And then what? We've got indie film called Catfish. This premiered at the Sundance Film Festival this year. I did not get a chance to see it, unfortunately. I've heard good things. I've heard bad things. I've heard neutral things. So this is just one of those movies. I guess depending on what kind of movies you like, will depend on if you like it or not. So
I've heard almost nothing about it. Like, people just say, hey, go see this, but don't read anything about it. Don't watch any trailers. Don't even find out what genre it is, whatever. So I am taking that advice to heart, and I'm kind of looking forward to checking this out, almost in like an Inception-like media blackness that we talked about a while back, where it's not like I'm anticipating it, so I don't look at it. I don't look at any marketing materials to ruin it for myself. It's basically like, oh, I just kind of heard about it, and I know nothing else, and it's almost coming out soon, so I might as well not see anything about it, and then just go watch it and see if it's good.
Yeah. All right, sounds good. And that's it. That's what's coming out this next week. My pick is The Town. What are you guys? What are your picks?
Yeah, let's go with The Town. Yeah. That's me.
Yeah, I would say The Town.
Absolutely.
I'm just for something fun. Easy A looks really good.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so there you have it. There you go. In conclusion, as we're wrapping everything up, don't forget, geektyrant.me is open. This is our store where you can buy t-shirts and stuff, glasses, and other awesome bits of Geek Tyrant memorabilia. Then you can donate if you feel so inclined or you're feeling generous to help keep this site running. Donate at geektyrant.com/donate. Subscribe to us on iTunes. That's where you can find these podcasts. Fan us on Facebook at facebook.com/geektyrantfans. And I always follow us on Twitter, Twitter at geektyrant, because we're always trying to Twitter it up and Facebook it up and doing all kinds of uppy things. I've been thinking about starting on MySpace account.
Dude, you're brilliant. Combining Facebook and MySpace into one thing, that's the next big thing. They're going to be making a movie about you called The Other Social Network.
The Other Social Network. MyFace. Yeah. Do people use MySpace anymore? I don't even know.
MySpace referred to as like the abandoned carnival of social networks. I don't remember where I heard that, but I thought it was really excellent.
It's good. I like that.
One other thing, if you guys listening to this, please leave us a review in iTunes, because that kind of helps our visibility a little bit. So if you like the podcast, even if you don't like it, go and just leave us a review. Any reviews at all would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, do we get it? We don't think we get many reviews. It's too bad. What about – you want to plug your podcast, buddy?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we started a new podcast a while back called the Not Just New Movies podcast, where we talk about older films. You can find that at notjustnewmovies.com or search for us in iTunes as well, Not Just New Movies podcast. This coming Sunday, which is September 19th, we're going to be talking about Top Gun and Days of Thunder. So we got a little Tom Cruise double feature coming up. So you can check out those movies and then head to those sites, notjustnewmovies.com and the other, to listen and check it out.
Other than that, I think we're good to go. I think we've set our piece.
Yep.
And thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate you listening to the podcast. We appreciate you coming to the site and reading our stuff. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And you guys have a great day, night, afternoon, whatever time it is that you're listening to this. Enjoy the rest of your day. Bye, everybody.